Welcome to Disturbed, a non-routine podcast that is not professional at all, but I'm using a really good app to make it look professional, where we talk about disturbing things that happen in the world, different stories, different topics, like last episode was on shock videos, gore videos. I don't know how to introduce her. I'm here with a guest today.
Oh my gosh, I'm a guest, guys.
What's poppin', Logan?
What's poppin'? My name is Rose. I'm Justin's best friend.
I wouldn't say best.
I'm your only friend at that point.
Yes, today with me is Rose Engler. Co-extraordinaire of the horrific.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. All you really are just saying is that I'm fucked up in the head like you.
Oh, no, yeah. Especially the like me part.
Oh, gross. Anyways.
So.
We.
Are.
Going.
To.
Be.
Talking.
About.
Murder.
Murder. Yeah,
murder. Murder.
That fun topic that we all come across, like, when we're three and are like, or was that just me?
Oh, that was me too.
Oh, cool, cool.
Like,
Mom?
Okay, I got a kind of a question before we get into, like, stories.
Okay.
What was your first, like, murder case that you heard about?
Ooh, if I remember correctly, it was JonBenet Ramsey. I remember, because, like, we weren't around when that happened, but I remember it was the anniversary of it, like, on the year, mm-hmm. not, like, by the decade or anything. And there was, like, that documentary thing, like, we've all seen one.
Yeah.
About JonBenet Ramsey. And so... They had these sidekicks on there, and it was like the dad did it, apparently, according to the sidekicks. And then JonBenet was like, Daddy didn't mean to kill me, or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I love when they bring, like, supernatural stuff into it.
Yeah, that was the first one I saw.
I don't really know the first thing that got me into murder, really. I kind of backed myself in a corner with this.
Nice job.
But...
What's, like, the first case that you truly remember, like, digging deep into? Mine was JonBenet Ramsey. What about you?
Mine was probably the Zodiac.
Ooh, the Zodiac Killer.
Yes. Yeah. But I know the one thing that got me into horror, and I will always quote this, is the Saw films.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one thing that got me into, like, gruesome, like, gory stuff.
Wait, okay. Yours was the Saw films. Mine was, Sinister. Actually, Sinister wasn't the first horror movie that I saw. I forget the first horror movie, but I was at, like, a little sleepover with two of my girlfriends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I say Saw because that's the one that got me into the real-life horror. I'd watched horror movies for a while, like Slasher and, like, Paranormal Activity movies.
Oh, yeah, like,
The Exorcist.
Yeah. Sinister... Have you seen Sinister?
I haven't seen Sinister, no.
Sinister.
Sinister.
Sinister is actually a really good movie.
I haven't seen Sinister yet.
Senator. LOL. Okay. So.
So cringe.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
So. Back on track with murder.
With murder? Yeah. So. For this story. This story. For this episode, we decided to go around the room. Let's see, we have Rose.
Right.
Justin.
Gannon.
Gannon?
Cannon.
Cameron.
The ghost in your house?
Carmen.
Oh, is it Carmen?
He can't speak, so it's only me and you. So, let's go around the room.
LOL.
Talk about murder. We have murder stories.
Okay. Do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
Are you prepared? I'm
prepared.
I have notes on my phone for mine.
I remember almost everything about this story.
Okay. Go for it.
This is, like, a long time ago. Like, Not, I'm not talking about, like, the 1950s, long time ago. I'm talking about, like, the...
Before the Church of England kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. This was, yeah. Actually, I think it was around the start of the Church of England. I could definitely be wrong. So, at this time, we gotta keep in mind that women were forced to be into, like, marriages that they didn't want to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And getting divorced was extremely frowned upon.
Yeah.
So, it was better to be a widow than to be divorced.
I love where this is going.
Right? So did I. So, Julia Tofana, she, I don't know if she was married at all or anything, but she started a business, and it was a makeup business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she'd sell little perfumes, right? And she'd sell really just cosmetics at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Julia Tofana had the biggest heart, and she hated the fact that these women were in these abusive and just horrible, outright horrible marriages. So, mm-hmm. her mom, backstory, her mom was like, I think she was a chemist or something. She created a poison. Her mom created a poison. And her mom taught her how to recreate poisons and make her own poisons and chemicals and stuff like that. It was super cool.
Best mom.
Right? I want a mom like that.
The mom you had to worry about putting accidentally putting poisons in your cereal. Mom. He's like, Mom, I'm turning a bit green. Oh, that's just the arsenic and...
Oh, honey, that's just the bulletproof shit in there.
Bulletproof?
I don't know. That was not what I meant to say. Jesus.
This is all in one take, by the way. We don't retry on this podcast.
Anyways. So, yeah, she knew how to, like, create poisons and put them into different things, right? Mm-hmm. So, she first would create this, like, and the packaging, oh my god, the packaging was immaculate. It looked legit in everything. So, it looked like an actual cosmetic product from that time.
So, like, what Fleshlight would do when you order from the mail.
Oh my god.
Look exactly like an Amazon box. That's what they do. It's, like, just a normal plain box. Who would have thought a Fleshlight would be in there?
Sickos. Anyways.
I don't know from experience.
Okay.
Why did my voice break there?
Okay.
Okay.
So, she would sell, like, on the DL, on the down low. Like, if you heard of Julia Tofana, that means she trusted the person that you heard from. And she only recruited people that, like, had a good name, that, like, other people gave her a good name. And, like, yeah, she wouldn't snitch on you, girl. Stuff like that.
Mobster stuff.
This was, like, some mobster gang shit right here. And it was amazing. Because it was for the greater good, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
This is why I love this story. So, she created this cosmetic product.
Mm-hmm.
Looked legit as hell. And it even had instructions on it. It was like, oh, put, like, 2 drops in your eye or something. It was like a little dropper. What was in it was poison.
So, put 2 drops in your eyes and your eyes shrivel out of your head kind of thing.
No. That would have been really cool. No. the instructions were just to make it look like an actual cosmetic product. Because if, like, suspicion, like, stirred up and they're like, what is this? They could be like... The widow or woman would be like, yeah, it's just cosmetics. Like, look, there's even instructions. Ta-da! You know?
And make it safe so she could actually put it in her eyes?
Yeah, they're gonna make her put it in their eye. No.
It's like during the Salem witch trials when they'd, like, bind a woman and tell her to get in a pool of water.
If you
float, then you're a witch. If you sink, then you're fine. But they don't... They don't
help you out.
They don't help you out. It's like, oh, she could just be faking it. If she'll let herself die, she's not a witch.
That's funny.
How is the Salem witch trials funny?
They aren't.
Anyways.
So, what would happen is a woman could, like, pour it all into a soup at once and just kill a guy dead over, or she could do it over time, poison him lightly over time. So what you would do is you would take the dropper and you'd probably put, like, 2 drops into, like, soup or something. We're gonna stick with soup. You'd put two drops of it in soup and give it to your husband. He'd eat it. He'd be like, mmm, this shit is so good. You know?
This is bussin'.
This is some bussin' soup.
Bussin' soup.
So then, after a while, he'd be sick, right? But it, like, the, symptoms, that's the word, would just present itself as, like, the flu or something. Mm. So they'd call a doctor, and the doctor would be like, yeah, this is just the flu. So then the doctor would give him stuff for the flu. Ta-da!
Yeah. Ta-da!
Ta-da!
No, that so reminds me of this one story. Back to the present here. Sidebar nation here. So, this reminds me. There's, like, this mother who has, what is it called? Something by proxy. What is it?
I've never heard.
Munchausen's by proxy.
I don't know. What is that?
It's when, you want to make the people around you sick so that you get the sympathy. Munchausen's by proxy.
Yeah, she I remember this. Yes.
She had Munchausen's by proxy, and her kid, she had a child. She had a little child who got sick.
I remember the movies. And stories and everything,
They got, well, the child got sick, and they went to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, he has way too much, salt in him. Like, his body's in chemical imbalance because there's so much salt in his diet. And so, I think it, like, brings his blood pressure up or something. Stabilize him.
Yeah.
They stabilize him. And then they just send him home. He's like, okay, he's fine.
Yeah.
He's up, he's acting like a kid, he's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a week later, he is having seizures. That's the symptoms. He would have seizures. He would go into
shock.
She
totally just poisoned her kid, didn't she?
Just wait.
Oh my goodness.
And so she brings the kid back in, and they treat him, and all that, and he's fine. And they go back home.
Yeah.
The rodeo goes again, and they're telling his mom, he's just coming back and having more salt in his diet. That's why he's having these seizures, is because there's so much salt in his diet. Mom's like, I haven't given him salt. All he's just drinking, like, formula. And the doctors
How old is this kid?
I think he's, like, a baby.
Oh, no.
It's like, I'm just giving him milk, like, formulaed milk. It's like, okay, change the formula. He's like, okay. So then he has seizures again.
Oh, goodness.
After they change the formula. And he's in the office, and he is rough. Like, he's rough in the office.
Oh, poor baby.
And they get him better. He starts getting better. And then one day, all of a sudden, flatline.
Oh, no.
They're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
We just got the salt out of him. He's been in the hospital.
Yeah, how?
How would he do that? So they look, and they're like, well, maybe the doctors tried and intentionally killed him. So what they do is they look on the security cameras, and do they find?
Is she?
The mother is going in there and force feeding the child salt. Pure salt.
Pure fucking salt.
So they use this. They use this as reason to search her house. What happens when they search their house?
There are, like, millions of gallons of salt in there.
Salt was in his milk. Oh. Like, his bottles had residue of salt.
Oh my god.
Salt was in his bed.
No.
Yes.
No.
Salt was literally in his bed. In his crib. Salt was in his crib. He was having tons of salt just in his body all the time because it would make him sick. And this woman got the sympathy from it.
That, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But that's not even my story.
That's not your story.
That's a sidebar.
Sidebar stories. We love them.
So, I'm sorry. Keep going with,
Julia Tofana. Yes. So, the doctor would be like, the doctor would then, like, come back and be like, yo, I just treated this motherfucker. I just treated this motherfucker. Why is he still sick?
He's like, I just had some bussin' soup and all of a sudden I got the sniffles.
Yeah, they would be like, oh, okay, maybe it's, like, food poisoning, you know? Maybe, but
Maybe that bussin' soup. The bussin'
so bussin'.
That bussin' part was actually fungi.
That bussin' part was part of something scandalous.
Part of something scandalous.
Okay, stop. This isn't an ASMR podcast.
ASMR. Sorry. But yeah, so the doctor would then try to treat him for, like, food poisoning. Mm-hmm. Well, this woman, she's still feeding the guy, you know? Women have to make the food, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's societal norms.
Yeah.
So, stay in the kitchen.
Stay in the kitchen, make the babies. Make me a sandwich. Yeah. Clean, keep everything clean. We all know the society norms, and they are not cool anymore. So, haha.
We won.
We won! So, yeah, she'd still be cooking food for him, and she'd still be putting the poison in there.
Yeah.
2 drops. Well, finally, the dude's gonna die, right?
The dude be clonked dead.
Well, I think, I could definitely be wrong, but I think the woman got a few assets, mainly because he wasn't, like, murdered or anything. He died of, like, quote-unquote natural causes. And since they didn't...
He died of illness.
Yeah, he died of illness. So I think she got a little bit of, like, property and stuff like that.
Whatever was in the will. But normally everything would go to the first oldest son.
Yeah. But since it was, like, an illness, I think she got something.
She got the... In the will, she would have gotten something, but most of the properties would go to
property,
the
money,
son.
Stuff like that would go to, like, sons and
the
everything.
Oldest son.
Yeah.
Especially, like, the profession, junk yeah. like that would go to the oldest.
Yeah. So, she got rid of her husband that way.
Yeah.
Well, Julia Tofano is alleged of killing over 600 men.
Mmm.
Yes.
That reminded me, there was, like, a doctor. It was, like, an old man doctor.
Oh, yeah. He'd kill his patients.
He would kill his patients, and there was only, like, 10 that they know was him.
Oh, I bet he's done so many more, dude.
But they think it's upwards of 1,000. Because
no.
he's been doing this over the years. They don't know, they can't specify, because they don't know if they died of actual natural causes, or if they died because he killed them.
Oh, dude, that's, like, that's sick.
That is. Well, the big thing was his mother had cancer, I think. And I think she died of a morphine overdose in the hospital.
Oh.
And he saw that firsthand, and he saw just the pain go away, and he thinks
that he's helping them.
Yeah, he has God complex.
Yeah.
Like, textbook God complex.
God. That stuff scares me, honestly.
Like, oh, no. What scares me is, like, anesthesia. There's 3 medicines in anesthesia. One that calms your nerves,
yeah.
kind of, and makes it to where your body doesn't move.
Yeah.
A stabilizer, I guess.
Pretty much.
One that puts you to sleep, and one
the
that
normal
makes,
one.
Yeah.
That, like, surgeries and everything.
No. Any anesthesia is made up of 3 medications.
Oh,
the one that
yeah.
puts you to sleep.
LOL.
The one that makes your body just stay still.
Yeah.
And the one that makes sure you don't feel anything.
Yeah.
Well, what scares me is there is a point where you could, these 3 anesthesias could become imbalanced,
mm-hmm.
and you could be awake, not be able to do anything,
yeah.
but still feel everything.
Yeah, I've heard of a bunch of those. What's yeah. that called? Hang on.
I don't know. Anesthesia imbalance? I don't know.
When you can feel things
during surgery.
Yes, I do say everything out loud. The condition calls, anesthesia awareness. Yeah, waking up during surgery means the patient can recall their surroundings or an event related to the surgery while under general anesthesia. Although it can be upsetting, patients usually do not feel pain when experiencing anesthesia awareness. Okay.
Some can.
Some definitely can. Like, you've heard
yeah.
I've heard a few stories of people waking up and they're like, I can feel my bones breaking.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going into my phone notes because do you know Murderpedia?
I do not.
Murderpedia is like a Wikipedia for killers.
I love that.
And, well, I did the whole Murderpedia site of this one killer.
What's his name?
Her name.
Yes, ma'am. What's her name?
Gertrude Nadine Banaszewski.
That's a poppin' name.
also known as Gertrude Wright, or the torture mother.
I've heard of her.
Yes.
Oh my god.
An Indiana divorcee who oversaw and facilitated the prolonged torture and mutilation and eventual murder of Sylvia Likens, a teenage girl who had taken into her home.
Yeah.
I've told you this story.
No, I've seen it on YouTube. Yeah. Do you know, what's her name? I feel so bad for not knowing her name because I absolutely love her. It's Murder, Mystery, and Makeup Monday.
I know her!
Murder, Mystery, and Makeup Monday.
It's like...
Bailey Sarian!
Bailey Sarian!
Yes! That's where I've heard the story.
Yes!
Jeez.
Okay, so, basically, Sylvia's parents were carnival workers.
Yeah.
Yeah, carnies. And they were drunk, basically, and they're like, I don't want to deal with my kids. So, like, we need someone to take them.
No, I don't think it was that. I actually don't think that they could support them.
Because
they were always traveling.
Let's see.
I could definitely be wrong, though.
In July of 1965, Paula Banaszewski met up with a friend of hers. Paula Banaszewski is Gertrude's daughter.
Yeah.
Who is, I think, pregnant.
At this time?
Yep, she's 17 and 3 months pregnant. After a fling with a married man.
Ooh, get it, girl.
In July 1965, Paula met up with a friend of hers, Darlene McGuire. Darlene.
Darlene, how about you come out here and get me some fresh tea?
Fresh tea.
I hate living in the South. Anyways, go ahead.
Who introduced her to two new neighborhood girls, Sylvia Marie Likens.
Yeah.
I think it's Marie or is it Mary?
Marie.
Marie Likens, who was 16, and Sylvia's younger sister, Jenny, who was 15, who was required to walk with braces due to polio.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I learned about polio, I've known it existed, but I finally learned about it a few days ago, ironically. That shit's scary.
Okay, so here's what happens. The Likens girl's mother, Betty, was in county jail. Oh my god,
where's Archie?
Where's Archie?
Sorry, I had to. Go ahead.
Riverdale joke?
Did you? Yeah. Ta-da!
Ta-da!
I'm funny, guys. You should really
Betty, at the time, was in county jail after having been arrested for shoplifting.
Honestly,
which left Sylvia to care for her sister.
Yep.
Betty had abandoned Sylvia's father, Lester, and effectively kidnapped the daughters.
Nice job. Jesus.
When Paula heard of this, she offered to let Sylvia and Jenny spend the night. The next day, Lester arrived in town, having tracked down Betty. He ran into McGuire, who recognized the description Lester gave of his daughters, and she directed him to the Banaszewski home.
I'm sorry. When you say McGuire, I automatically think of Lizzie McGuire, and Betty, then I just see Lizzie McGuire.
Yeah, it's Betty.
It's funny.
Miss Betty. When Lester arrived, Banaszewski introduced herself as Mrs. Wright. Even though she was married to Mr. Wright, but they divorced. She wasn't part of the Wright family at the time, and she just used the Wright name.
I see what you did there. The Wright name. LOL.
Okay. The two struck up a conversation, and the idea of Gertrude taking in Sylvia and Jenny as boarders, came up.
Yeah, it was just worked into the conversation.
Yeah. He had spoken with his wife at the county jail, where they had reconciled and agreed to travel U.S. carnival circuit as carnies. Carnies, Rose.
That's the funniest thing to me. Like, out of everything you can do, when you're
she's in jail for shoplifting, and the husband just walks in like, hey, you want to go run off and join the circus? Literally, you want to go run off and join the circus.
That's just so funny to me.
Yes. No one alive knows whether Banaszewski or Lester suggested that she board the girls, but eventually, Lester agreed to leave the children in Banaszewski's care for $20 a week.
I would have asked for more money, but anyways.
Lester did not inspect the home before leaving.
Oh, because...
Yeah, because it's the 60s of I don't want to intrude kind of thing. Had he have done so, he would have discovered that Gertrude's home had no stove or microwave. Jeez. That there were only enough beds for half the people already living in the house.
No.
Yes. Mm-mm. That the only things Gertrude kept in her pantry was bread and crackers. And that most of the surfaces in the home were caked with thick layers of dust. And only enough plates and eating utensils for three people.
That's gross.
Exactly. The first week, Sylvia and Jenny were at the Banaszewski home. Went well. They attended high school.
Yeah, it was, like, it was going pretty good for, like, a month maybe, right?
I think it was only just a couple of weeks, though. I don't know.
Yeah, about a month.
Yeah, they went to teenage social functions with the Banaszewski children and church with Gertrude on Sundays.
Yeah.
But Lester's $20 payment failed to arrive. Mm-hmm. And Banaszewski threw a hissy fit, saying, quote, I took care of you two bitches for nothing. And forcing them to lie across her bed with their skirts and underwear around their ankles while Banaszewski beat them in their buttocks.
Okay. I don't support spanking your kid.
I think it's sometimes needed, but I don't think you should do it excessively. I don't think you should use fear to get your kids to behave.
Exactly. I don't think fear is going to be good when you impound it into a child.
Yeah, I would prefer make the child think, I don't want to disappoint you, instead of, like...
No, because then at that... Cause that's what I do, and yeah, it doesn't work out very well. Mm. Anyways.
Shortly thereafter, Lester and Betty came into town to check on the girls. Huh. Neither of them made any reference to the beatings, presumably under threat.
Okay, what?
No, the Banaszewski threatened them, told them to stay quiet.
I know, okay, we haven't gotten to that part in the story, but...
No, there were so many people that saw this and said nothing because they didn't want to intrude, or they thought that's just the girls getting...
Punished.
Punished, yeah.
No, at some point, there's...
I saw that.
Thanks. Their sister comes along and, like...
Yes!
Yeah.
Their sister!
Their sister comes and she's like, hey, what's wrong? And she opens up about it. And then
the sister just says, stop being a baby, she's just disciplining you.
Exactly. Even though this is torture, not discipline.
Literal torture. We haven't even gotten to the worst of it yet. Have you heard of the Coca-Cola bottle incident? Oh.
She got literal children around the neighborhood to beat the fuck out of her.
Yes! That's not even the worst. Oh, just wait.
Just wait.
The next week... Sylvia and Jenny went through the neighborhood garbage, collecting old Coca-Cola bottles to sell in order to get money. When they came home with the candy, Banaszewski accused them of stealing. They wanted to get money for candy. When they came home with the candy, Banaszewski accused them of stealing. When Sylvia explained how she had gotten the candy, Banaszewski accused her of lying and made her bend over her bed as before, while she beat her with a paddle.
There was actually, I think it was... is she bought it, and then someone thought they were shoplifting, too, but then...
Oh, that's later.
No.
That was Paula, I think.
Oh, yeah,
that was Paula that accused them of shoplifting. Oh, it's bad.
This is a story that, like, there's so many things you hear about, and you're like, okay, this is just, like, a Stephen King book.
Yes, exactly, no, like Stephen King.
Exactly. This isn't a Stephen King book. This is real life fucked up shit.
Yes! No, shortly thereafter, the Banaszewski children came to Gertrude Banaszewski after a church social and told her that they were disgusted with the amount of food they had seen Sylvia eating because they can't feed her properly.
Yeah.
Banaszewski told Sylvia that she was angry that Sylvia would do something to ruin her physical appearance and forced the girl to eat a hot dog piled with condiments.
Yeah.
When Sylvia vomited, obviously, Banaszewski forced her to scoop the vomit up and devour it.
No, I've never heard that part. That's,
yeah.
That's, oh my god.
And they came into town. Lester and Betty came into town again to check on the girls, per Banazuski's instructions. Sylvia made no reference to the vomiting incident.
Poor Sylvia. I just wish kids... The thing is, like, I wish kids would speak up about abuse, but then the part is, like, I wish there wasn't abuse to where they didn't have to speak up, you know? Yeah.
No, dude, if you hear the end of this story, you'll be like, yes, queen! Okay.
Yeah. Yes, queen. Sylvia fucking dies.
Just wait. Jenny does something.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I haven't heard it in a while.
Okay, so the one thing that... The incident, which appears to have either precipitated, triggered, or coincided with the sharp decline of Banazuski's mental stability, happened in August of 1965, when she overheard Sylvia remark that she had once allowed a boy to feel her up. Banazuski inexplicably burst into a fit of obscenities, accused Sylvia of being a prostitute, and informed the rest of the house that Sylvia was pregnant because she had let a boy touch her vagina. Banazuski then attacked Sylvia, repeatedly kicking her in the crotchal regions.
Is she trying to, like, not get her pregnant, or make sure she isn't pregnant?
No, she knows she's not pregnant. And the thing is, and this makes it even worse, Paula is pregnant because of an affair.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She is.
Banazuski's own child. When Sylvia attempted to sit down afterwards, Paula threw her out of the chair. The pregnant woman, threw her out of the chair and informed, you ain't fit to sit in chairs.
You ain't fit to sit here.
From then on, Banazuski only allowed Sylvia to sit in a chair with permission.
Jeez. Imagine just like going downstairs, you have a bowl of chips or something, and you go to sit down, and then like someone's like, you can't sit there? Did you ask to sit there? It's like, well, I'm sorry, I live here.
Yeah. Well, technically, her and Jenny didn't technically live there. That was a problem. Around this time, Banazuski also began allowing her older children to use Sylvia as a sort of living plaything.
Yep.
With the games ranging from beatings to being pushed downstairs.
They all just fucking brutally attacked her. Sexually, physically, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally. Anything you could think of, I bet you anything they did.
Banazuski manifested her rage by justifying her attacks by accusing Likens of Sylvia of being a prostitute and delivering bizarre sermons to her children and Sylvia about the filthiness of prostitutes and women in general.
Oh, goodness. Isn't she a woman, though?
She is, yeah.
How does that
work? I don't know. Half her children's... Children are men or women. Yeah. Okay, so the day after the crotch-kicking incident...
Oh.
According to Jenny, as an act of vengeance, Sylvia and Jenny told their classmates that they had seen Paula and Stephanie, Banazuski's second oldest daughter, having sex with boys in exchange for money. When Stephanie's 15-year-old boyfriend, Coy Hubbard, discovered what Sylvia and Jenny had said, he came to the Banazuski home and beat Sylvia. From then on, Hubbard, encouraged by Banazuski, made frequent visits to the home, during which she would instruct the boy to practice his judo on Sylvia. Also around this time, Banazuski got Sylvia's best friend, a 13-year-old named Anna Sisko, alone long enough to convince her that Sylvia had been telling boys at school that Anna's mother was a whore. When Banazuski took Anna to see Sylvia, she directed Anna in a violent attack on the girl. Soon after, Banazuski told one of Paula's friends, a girl named Judy Duke, that Sylvia had been spreading rumors about her mother and pitted the girls against each other in a fist fight. During the fight, Banazuski instructed Jenny to punch Sylvia. When Jenny refused, Gertrude began to beat her in the face with her fists until Jenny finally agreed to punch Sylvia. A girl with polio and can't walk correctly. She punches her in the face.
This is just next level.
And there's so many... We don't really have time. Or I would go through the many witnesses.
Oh my god. There were so many eyewitnesses that witnessed the bruising, the
the bees. The
oh no! Torch. At a barbecue. At a barbecue, Paula announced. There's this Let's see. In the neighbor's backyard, the Vermilions. Paula went up to one of them because Sylvia had a black eye.
Oh.
Paula went up to one of them and said, "I did that," and then said, "Watch this," and threw a cup of boiling water in her face.
Yep. And they didn't do shit.
And then, to demonstrate how this happened, Paula took her belt off and beat Sylvia with it in front of Phyllis Vermilion. Mm-hmm. One of the Vermilions. And she neglected to do anything.
Just the lack of caring. If yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
It really boils my buns.
Yeah. Well.
It boils my buns.
Well. Now here's something else that happens. Sylvia needs a gym outfit for gym.
Oh my gosh, I remember this. This part, I hate it.
Yes.
Because this is when I honestly was over the edge.
Yes. And when Banazuki told Sylvia that they cannot afford one, Sylvia stole one from the school.
The thing was, is they definitely could afford one at that time.
Really?
Oh yeah, the thing was, is she didn't want to pay for anything. You think she's good? If she's not even going to pay for a single thing at candy, why would she pay for a school gym uniform?
Yeah, exactly.
They had the money to pay for it at that time.
Yeah, and Banazuski questioned Sylvia about the gym outfit and coerced Sylvia into confession. This segued onto the topic somehow of Sylvia stealing to Sylvia being a prostitute. And she threw Sylvia onto the ground, where she repeatedly kicked her in the crotch again, before once more returning to the topic of theft. To cure Sylvia of her quote-unquote sticky fingers, Banazuki burned the tips of each of Sylvia's fingers with a lit cigarette.
Yep.
Afterwards, she made Sylvia bend over and whipped her with a belt. After this incident, the smokers in the Banazuki home began arbitrarily putting their cigarettes out on Sylvia's body as a reminder for her not to steal. Sometime later, Likens went out again to sell old soda bottles for money. When she returned home, this is the Coca-Cola bottle incident, Banazuski accused her of prostitution. Banazuski took her into the living room of her home and forced Sylvia to strip naked in front of her sons and several neighborhood boys on the threat of beating Jenny. Once Sylvia was fully naked, Banazuski handed her a glass Coca-Cola bottle and forced Sylvia to masturbate with it for the boys. Following this incident, Sylvia became incontinent.
Incompetent.
Incontinent is what it says.
Hmm.
I don't know. As a result, Banazuski decided that she was no longer fit to live with humans and locked her in the basement.
Oh, okay. It means that she was just, like, so traumatized that she couldn't even interact with anyone anymore.
Yeah. The lack of a toilet forced Sylvia to defecate and urinate on the floor. When Banazuski saw this, she began a bathing regimen to cleanse Sylvia, whom she began calling Dirty Girl. The regime consisted of filling Gertrude's claw-footed bathtub with scalding water, binding Sylvia's wrists and ankles, then dunking Sylvia into it. Scalding water. The regime was administered arbitrarily, sometimes once or many times a day, some days not at all. Following the baths, Paula Banazuski would rub handfuls of salt over Sylvia's nude body.
Oh, no.
I do have a kind of a question.
What?
Do you think salt would burn in the vaginal area?
Soap?
Yeah, because that, with the penis, like the tip of the penis, burns if soap gets in it.
Yeah. With, like, okay. This is, like, really weird. But, like, if soap gets in a vagina, it's not supposed to be there. Because the vagina already has enzymes and acids in it that clean itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, if anything foreign goes in there, or even around it sometimes, it's, like...
messes with the pH levels.
Yeah.
So the enzymes get... Yeah.
It can hurt.
Mm.
So, with salt, since it's, if it was iodized salt, that shit's gonna sting.
It's probably just regular salt, like table salt.
That's iodized salt, idiot.
Okay. During this period, Banduszewski took on 14-year-old Ricky Hobbs, a neighborhood boy, as her personal assistant.
Oh, yeah.
When dealing with Sylvia. Hobbs, an honor student from a middle-class family with no previous legal trouble, experienced a sudden shift in personality upon becoming Banduszewski's assistant, blindly following whatever orders she gave him. Crime reporters have since speculated that Hobbs was Banduszewski's lover.
Oh, okay.
And that she had seduced the boy into becoming her henchman. So, she hates Sylvia for being a prostitute.
And then turns around and sleeps with the little kid. And
becomes a pedophile.
Yeah.
Banduszewski's children turned Sylvia into a money-making opportunity, charging neighborhood children a nickel to gawk at the nude Sylvia or to push her down the stairs to the basement, where she was now kept when not being bathed or put on display. She was kept constantly naked and rarely fed. She was allowed to eat, it was in some bizarre fashion. Such as the instance in which Banduszewski insisted that she eat soup with her fingers.
First off, how the fuck do you do that?
How do you do that? Often, Banduszewski and her 12-year-old son, John Jr., would make Sylvia clean the basement by, quote-unquote, allowing her to eat her own feces, and gave Sylvia a container in which she could collect her urine, which she was then made to drink.
Oh, gross. No.
Oh, and this was when, okay, sometime around this period, Jenny managed to send contact to her and Sylvia's older sister, Diana,
mm-hmm.
who was married and had a family of her own. Jenny outlined the horrors that Sylvia, that her, she and Sylvia were experiencing, and instructed Diana to contact the police to come rescue them. Diana ignored the letter, believing that Jenny was simply displeased with being punished, and that she's making up stories so that she could come live with her.
Yep. That's what pissed me off the most right there.
Oh, one of the neighborhood children who had been by to see Sylvia, Judy Duke, 12
yeah.
years old, Judy Duke, went home and told her mother they were beating and kicking Sylvia. The girl's mother replied that that was what happened when someone was punished. I'm skipping to the murder since we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
Gertrude called on October 20th, Gertrude called the police to come arrest a boy at her home. Robert Bruce Hanlon was a local youth who claimed that Banduszewski's children had stolen things from his basement. He had come to the home earlier in the evening demanding that Banduszewski return his things. When she refused, he attempted to sneak into the home to take them back. Phyllis Vermillion witnessed Hanlon being put in the back of a squad car and approached the police to speak on his behalf, as she had earlier overheard the argument between Banduszewski and Hanlon over the stolen goods. Vermillia made no mention of Sylvia during her conversation with the police. On October 21st, Banduszewski instructed John Jr., Coy, and Stephanie to bring Sylvia up from the basement and tie her to a bed, telling Sylvia that if she could hold her bladder through the night, she'd be permitted to sleep upstairs. Banduszewski checked the next morning and discovered Sylvia had wet the bed. Banduszewski made her dress, took her into the living area, where she was once again forced to perform a striptease for her sons and the neighborhood boys. Again, climaxed by Banduszewski forcing Sylvia to masturbate with a Coca-Cola bottle. When Sylvia was finished, she was allowed to dress. After a few moments, apropos of nothing, Gertrude brought up Sylvia's lies about Paula and Stephanie and declared, "You have branded my daughters, so I will brand you."
Yep.
She was stripped naked and gagged while one of Banduszewski's children heated a sewing needle with a series of matches and spelled out the phrase on her stomach, "I'm a prostitute and proud of it." My dad just texted us. So we had to go, so I'll skip to the murder. She got murdered.
Yeah.
She got murdered. I think it was during one of the baths. She got murdered.
Yeah.
No one knows. It was Coy Hubbard took her to do the bath, and he was like, "She's not breathing."
And then Sylvia called the police and tried to play the victim. Like, oh my god,
Sylvia? She's dead.
Oh no, Gertrude. The police, and she's like, "Oh no."
Acted like a victim.
Yeah.
And then Jenny went up to one of the police officers, and this is what I love about this story. Jenny went to one of the police officers and whispered in his ear, "Get me out of here." and I will tell you everything. Mm-hmm. And Jenny was the one that was the witness to everything and got them in jail.
And that wraps it up. And Gertrude, okay, if you look her up, she's ugly as fuck.
She is ugly. She looks scary.
She looks like...
She looks like someone who would name themselves Gertrude.
Not even, like, to be funny, but, like, to fucking scare people.
Yeah. Anyway, that wraps up Murder. Disturbed.
This has been episode 3 of...
Episode 2 of Disturbed.
This time with Rose.
I don't know, I might have you as a co-host or something. Or just a regular guest.
I'm thinking co-host.
Co-host.
Co-host, girl. I would be a great co-host.
I mean, it's better than me just sitting in my room laughing at my own jokes.
Because you make horrible ones?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even know if the phone can hear you right now.
He makes horrible jokes! Anyways. Everyone, have a great, great day or night, depending on when you're hearing this or when you're listening to this.
And remember, don't burn your children.
Or, you know, strip them and make people watch. It's fucking creepy.
That is so weird. She might as well be a pedophile.
This lady was a pedophile.
Anyway, thank you for coming along and telling the story.
Of course.
Nice.
Ow, your rings hurt me. Sorry.
Anyway, guys, that was Disturbed, the unprofessional podcast about horror.
And tune in to the next episode where I will definitely be a co-host.
I don't know. Maybe.
I am.
If I can get her to do the freaking podcast with me. I've been trying for like 3 days.
I'm sorry. I like chess. LOLs.
Yeah, we'd rather record in the library than play chess, but... Rose wants to play chess at the library, so...
I beat him all the time, and it's so much fun.
I'm gonna beat you next time. Anyway.
Wait, no!
Here, everybody. Good night. Good night, good evening, whatever. Remember, be tolerant, don't be racist or homophobic, and
please be safe. Oh my god.
And don't brand your children on their stomachs and say, with I'm cigarettes. A prostitute and I know it, or whatever. I'm a prostitute and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Bye. Okay.
Bye.
That was depressing.
Bye.